Easy E, how are we?
Johnny, I'm in good form. I turned into a little tour guide, Sean, I did.
You turned into a tour guide, as in like tour guide when you're over there in Dubai and having tours of people who were stuck in the rain every day? Or what are you talking about here?
Oh, well, yeah, that too. We had visitors, so I was a tour guide here. But like Lawless's lackluster adventures, right? I have been busy, Sean. I have been busy. And after we got a couple of responses about Rome Marathon, I have been doing a lot of investigation.
Oh.
So we need to know. So this is me, like, if a podcast was ever a WhatsApp group message, I'm putting in the message.
It's a broadcast message. It's literally a broadcast message. Okay. We used to talk about these intros before we did record, but go ahead.
We are going to, and we'll start the podcast like this. We are going to put out the details, kind of an expression of interest. Places will be limited, but we are, Lawless's lackluster tours are planning a trip to Rome for Rome Marathon next year from the 14th to the 17th of March. Paddy's weekend, the bank holiday Monday is Paddy's day. So it'll be from Friday to Monday. That will include transfers, hotel, a half day tour I have put into the good bag, as well as flights and possibly a really, really nice t-shirt from the podcast, because you know how much I love a t-shirt. So it's that's what we're planning for next year. Sean will include the link to just a Google form. Basically, we need to know numbers. We are limited at 50 people. So you can travel in pairs, you can share a room, you can bring your spouse. We don't really mind how that works, because let's be honest, a trip to Rome is only bought in bribes to the other half who lets us go and run. So it's open for everyone at the minute, but do express your interest of if you want to take Lawless's lackluster adventure.
Yeah, I got nothing on top of that. I mean, I was going to talk about running around Clongowes for the weekend, but what's the point when you bring up Rome?
Yeah, look, it's we have to get it out there early. And I know we had our podcast 2 weeks ago on it, and before it's forgotten and people start making other plans. Well, look, we don't mind who, me and Sean will do it anyway, but it's just to get it out there. If people are interested, it gives plenty of time for people to plan and to finance and all of the other things that make trips away a little bit more complicated. But yes, keep it in mind before we get into this week's episode. But you were busy, Sean. You had a 10K.
Yeah, I think I did me first. I don't want to say road race, because half it was actually on a pitch, which is a lot harder to run on, especially when you wear those carbon runners. Sometimes you're running and you're like, I feel a bit of a spring, but what I feel this spring, because it's just a race environment, and I get this anyway from runners. As soon as I went on the pitch, I was like, oh, there goes the spring. I'll be honest now. And the wind was hitting me. But it was the first time going for for what I am now, a fast pace, a threshold pace for that sustained amount of time, because everything has been mileage. And like we talked about this earlier today, like you can get all the easy runs to go fast, and the course has built up that aerobic base. But nothing really beats that running fast and trying to hold on to that. And trying to hold that was tough. Now, I got a 4:45 average pace over the 10K. I was happy enough with it in respect. I just got to take my mind off the fact it's 5 minutes slower than my overall PB time. But it's just nice to run again and have those practice races. And it really didn't hit how much important it was until this week's guest, we'll get on to a second. When we were talking to him, he was saying how sometimes you need races to like put yourself in that race position. You can't just like run the roads at a race pace. Sometimes you need that little bit of anxiety, that people run around you, trying to run around people, or trying not to get too caught into running ahead, and have those B races that lead towards an A race. And it's something that I realize I need to get back doing a little bit of this. Now, I do have the mileage goal in August, a 24-hour goal, and a few little ideas built up towards that as well. But it's just nice to get back out and get a couple of road races in and stuff as well. So I have another one next week in Newton. Really enjoying my running lately, actually. I just hope the rain will disappear.
Yeah, and it is one thing, like when you're getting back into running, like you were worried about your mileage and getting back into it. And once you find that hunger and enjoyment, mileage is easy, you know. Getting out and putting those mileage in is just that much easier. And it is true what they say, like, you know, we got run slow to go fast. You have to add in that 20% of fast. You know, you have to. It's building your aerobic base, but then you need to push the anaerobic threshold a little bit every now and again. You know, push those paces, but not push too much. You know, it's don't redline every race.
Yeah.
Or every run. But as you said, the races are great, and the local races are the best to be involved with in your community. They're never far to travel. It's never a major 6 a.m. start. You know, like it's over and done with. You're having a coffee and cake at 10 o'clock. You know, it's always something that's enjoyable. So although I hate 5Ks and 10Ks, but they are so good. They are. They're so good to keep you honest. It's a threshold pace run surrounded by people, and you can get pushed. Like we say every week, train with people who are better than you. Race with people who are better than you. Try and hold on to that person. And then maybe just see if you can play a few mind games with them, pass them out, and then see if you can stay in front and get chased yourself. You know, like it's all about learning. And this episode this week, Sean, is a great segue into this, learning about yourself, learning about sport, learning how to get into a new type of trail run.
Absolutely. This is a really, really good episode. Learn getting into trail running. And it's mad the amount of guests we've had in the podcast, you'll hear in a second, who really got into running during that COVID lockdown period. I don't want to tell too much of his story because it is a fantastic listen. I think with that said, we're just going to hit the intro music and get into this week's episode of the Any Given Run Day podcast. Let's go.
Don't forget to sign up to Rome. That's it. Let's go.
So this week on the Any Given Monday podcast, we have a trail runner who recently finished 22nd out of 600 and third in his age category in the Istra Trail Marathon in Croatia, is a PE teacher, and also finds time to be a photographer as well. Rich Gills, welcome to this week's episode of the Any Given Monday podcast. How are you getting on?
Thanks very much. Yeah. Firstly, thanks so much for having me on. It's great to talk about something that obviously we all connect with and love doing. And yeah, it's a great thing to be involved in.
Rich, looking at your Instagram, one, it's class, the photos and stuff you have. Without even knowing your photographer, you could tell you're a photographer. Like that's what attracted me to your Instagram first. The views, like you have pictures of yourself running through the French Alps and everything else. But one of the most common questions we have people in the podcast to do all these trail runs and all the rest is, sure, they have all day to do it. Like they've all the time in the world to do it. Yet, like you've got a full-time job as a PE teacher and managing kids. I can't imagine how stressful that is. I'm sure it's rewarding, but it has to be stressful at time. You're a photographer as well that goes to like different places and does that kind of stuff as well. How do you fit the time?
It's a great question, and it's a question that I often ask myself and sometimes get found out about. And my body and my mind and my girlfriend, sometimes they remind me, hang on, slow down. You're busy, you're too busy, you know, just take a bit of rest and digest. And actually, in this last 12 months, I've really started to recognize that more. And actually, it's making a big difference. So yeah, full-time teacher and aspiring professional photographer, which I'm, you know, we can talk about a little bit later on. And obviously, you know, I've been, you know, been involved in sport all my life, which we can discuss the transition from different sports and then latterly into trail running. But yeah, it takes a hell of a lot of time, and not only to train, but to, you know, to go and earn your crust. And also to, you know, spend time with friends and family. So I don't have kids. So that's one, you know, like you could say, you know, that's given me a chance, and I'm in my 40s now. But yeah, it's a busy time.
Everyone with screaming toddlers are cursing you now, Rich. That's it.
Yeah, I know.
So you have had a varied amount of sport and a good foundation of sport. We've had lots of guests come on and talk about athletics being a foundation, but your foundation was swimming and football.
Correct. Yeah.
How did you find, I suppose, one bit from getting into the triathlon side of things? I wish I focused on the swimming side of things and not the football side of things. It's one thing as an adult I'm finding so much more difficult to learn and adapt to instead of progressing with. How have you found that foundation? Because you only started getting into trail running through COVID, like the rest of us. How did you find the foundation level of your base fitness anyway? Did you always have a good base fitness?
Well, it's a funny one, really. I've always been quite competitive. I've always wanted to do the best I can. And from an early age, I was fortunate. And I'm grateful to have grown up in the Edinburgh Council estate in Sheffield, but right on the border of farmland and the countryside. So that gave me, and I'm the middle child. I've got two brothers. I'm the middle lad, but that gave me a real opportunity to grow up with, luckily, next to my friends, but also in the great outdoors of the countryside. And every day after school, I was out playing football with my mates or on the bikes, taking on maybe playing tennis, going playing hide and seek, whatever it was. I was out being active. I got a busy body and a busy mind. And my friends around me were just so involved in football. So I got involved with football. My parents weren't necessarily into football at all. My mother wasn't. My father was a rugby player and he wanted me to go down the rugby route. And I just didn't grab to it. So football became a massive part of my life. And I did actually dream of becoming a professional footballer, like most lads did. Obviously, that didn't materialize, but I did play football from the age of 7 right through till about 37. I stopped a few years ago. I played every weekend, Saturdays, Sundays, trained, and I absolutely loved it. I never made a semi-professional sort of standard, of course. But yeah, what I got gained from football and that camaraderie playing with the lads and competing and that aggression in games and that winning and losing in battles was great. Go back again to when I was about 10, 11, and I thank my mother for this massively. She wanted to make sure that her three lads didn't hang around on the street corners and get up to mischief. Okay, and that it can easily happen in around the streets of Sheffield. My parents are never going to let us do that. But my oldest brother, who was a very good swimmer, and my youngest brother, it turned out to be a great swimmer too. She grabbed all three boys and dropped them in a swimming pool and said, "This is the local club you're going to get involved in." Okay, yes, Rich, you're playing football, great, but Pete and James, my brothers, they don't necessarily play football, but we want them involved in sport. She knew that sport taught us a lot of life lessons. So we joined the local swimming club, and the local swimming club was great, so close to the home. And we were training from three nights to ended up being about six nights a week in the pool, where we got Yorkshire times. My brother was better. He got national times. And that discipline with training was massive. That endurance and that aerobic capacity during training was huge. And obviously we didn't see that as kids, but what that did give us, we're going back to your first question, is that sort of discipline in training from an early age. And all I did was, I knew I wasn't the best swimmer, but I knew that the training and the commitment at a young age, and I didn't particularly get much thrill from it, because you're just looking at the pool floor for an hour. There's no interaction or communication. It's not a team sport. It's quite, you're quite in your own space. So that also teaches you some lessons about a strong mindset and a determination to finish and just get through a session. And all I fueled that for was to, if I get really good at swimming and my endurance and I get stronger and fitter, I'll be fitter for football. I've got a better chance of making it. Okay. Yeah. So that was where, and if so, you could look at, six times a week, seven nights a week or days a week, I was active. What comes of that? Of course, there's a lot of running. I was running to swimming. I was cycling to swimming. I was running to football. I was playing football. I was running. Running and walking is an everyday activity that we do without realizing, of course. And, when I look back and you mentioned there that showing that I started running on it in COVID. Well, I started running as a kid. I just didn't realize I was running every day, you know, in a slightly different way with agility, pace, power, stop, start. Okay. But it wasn't for a marathon or, you know, ultra distance or a half marathon or whatever, the straight line. It was all over the bloody place, you know? So, you know, I've got a busy body and a busy mind, and I thank my parents and my friends for getting me sort of involved in sport at such a young age.
I suppose running since COVID would be, I think you wrote it in one of your Instagram posts, more seriously, as in you took it more so as a sport. Just get out of the way, I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but since growing up swimming, you're doing very well running. Has the Ironman question been said to you a lot? Like, it's just the one discipline to do that. Like, a lot of people struggle to swimming, but you've got a great base there. So have you been asked that? Have you been tempted, or is cycling not a thing for you?
It's a great question. And like you said, it's the discipline that is the hardest to sort of grasp is swimming. Most people, in fact, I'll quickly diverse a little bit, but when I was a swimmer, before I became a PE teacher, I was a swimming teacher, a swimming coach. And for a spell, I was teaching wannabe triathletes the discipline of swimming to a lot of runners and cyclists come into my session on a Tuesday night. And they were all aspiring to improve their technique for front crawl, especially to become more aerodynamic, you know, in the water. And I coached swimming up until I was like 26 before then. Then after university, I went traveling and became a PE teacher. That's another story. But I got lots of guys coming, and I was like, I can do this. You know, I wasn't a runner then. I was a cyclist, but I'm a swimmer. And I never really crossed my mind until recently that I can already swim. I've got the technique. I just need to get the fitness back in swimming. Of course, that's lost. The running's there. Cycling, is that the easy bit? They say, I don't know. I don't trust myself or anyone else on a bike. That's the problem.
Eric knows that one. I'm not too sure. Is this, the cycling to me sounds like the easy bit as well, if you've got the run and the swimming down. I don't know.
No, the cycling, like, it is at any, like, swimming is at the most difficult. Running, as you've said, most of us have done it since kids. We've all played sport, we've all run around, and cycling, you won't be in the Tour de France. Like, there's a certain level of extreme athlete, but it's something that, again, as long as you're putting time in a saddle and putting in those training sessions, it's one that, as long as you can breathe and spin your legs, you can give a good go. So it is one that, I don't know, I reckon, Rich, we could see you doing something in a year.
Like you said there, Eric, it's time, isn't it? You've got to put a hell of a lot of hours on the road, you know, then factor in everything else. One of my good friends is training for it at the minute, and it's just, the time that you've got to dedicate, fair play.
It takes a hell of a lot. And for those who can do it consistently, Rachel, who's on, is training for an Ironman and the World Championships half. She'll probably qualify for the World Championships out of full as well, but we won't put any pressure on her if she's listening. But it is those who can stay consistent at it. It's absolutely amazing. For me, it was too much. I nearly fell out of love with it quite quickly from doing the full and starting to get back into it, because it does consume a whole lot of your life. No different, I'm sure, to ultra, or have you found that nice balance? Like, that transition away from football and COVID, how did you find, well, obviously you had the swimming mindset, but did you need to replace that football element and find something as an outlet for yourself?
That's a good question. I think the need to replace, yes. I think I'm one of those characters, I'm made up of something that I need to have something to focus on, for sure, to strive for, to be involved in, to feel a sense of sort of a community. And yes, but has done that for me through swimming, football, and now running, and the running community I'm learning and experiencing is the best. It's amazing, as you guys can probably vouch for. But yeah, for sure, the transition was a strange one, because there was a period where I was running and footballing, and I was coming towards the end of my footballing sort of stint where I should be joining the over 35s and joining. I didn't want to do that. I was so sick and tired. I was 37, 38, 30, sick and tired of chasing 21-year-old lads around who were super quick and agile and fast and taking it past me. And I'm getting frustrated. I was getting angry on the pitch. Mm. I was becoming a character on the pitch that is not me. And this was frustration. because I'm losing that speed and agility, which naturally you do as you get older. My stamina was there. My head was, you know, I could still kick a ball straight, you know, but I was getting frustrated. So I wasn't getting much joy from it. So the reason why I started running was it was a really sort of really interesting way of getting into something other than just something to do in lockdown. In 2019, in October, I was lucky enough to go on a school trip to South Africa. And this was 6 months before COVID struck. So there was myself and three or four of them, members of the PE team at school. We visited this this community in South Africa, which we'd done numerous trips with before. We did a lot of community work with them. We learned about the apartheid. We learned about the communities there in South Africa that didn't have much, but they had everything, music yeah. and smiles, and they were just the most joyous people to be around. But yet they were living in sort of poverty, you know, stricken sort of communities. We did a lot of work with these schools and communities, regeneration of plantations, vegetation patches, learning about how their communities work together just to get through life. But again, having not much, but having everything at the same time. And our students were on that trip with them. And it opened their eyes, because our students took such a while for them to open up to these students. I mean, it gets to the point where running came into this in the minute. And then we had a great experience. Fast forward 5-6 months and COVID hit, and we didn't know what the hell was going on. Everyone was a little bit like, what the hell? I was living on my own and school was shut and we were still trying to do teach online here and there. And it was a bit unknown at that period. And then I got a call. Were we going to lockdown in, was it March, April? It was, wasn't it?
March 2020, yeah.
And at the end of April, I got a call from one of the people we work with in South Africa saying, Rich, the community that you worked at, Johan Husmoor School in Tsikama, South Africa, they've got in touch with me to see if you and your students and staff at your amazing school in Rotherham in Sheffield, near Sheffield, can help out. Their community and the children rely on their daily nutrition food from their school dinners. And while their school is closed, which it was at the time because everyone suffered, the children weren't getting the daily nutrition because the families can't afford it. And then you go, Christ, you know, you don't realize how much school plays a pivotal role in the children's lives, providing nutritional food. So I was like, this is crazy. You know, these communities, these families can't afford to feed the family because the school's closed, where they got their free meals for the kids, which was nutrition, daily nutrition. Can you do anything to help raise something, some sort of money for this community that you work to? Yeah. We put our heads together, staff. What can we do? Okay. Month of May, lockdown. We are going to cover the distance from our school in Rotherham to their school, 8,760 miles in a month. That sounds a humongous feat to achieve. But we did it because what we did was I got a little video, a little chart on this live Google attachment. All the students that went on the trip, and there was 20-odd students, four staff, but all the PE staff got involved. But all the families that were connected to our students and staff could be involved too. And what you had to do is, whatever miles you did in a day, walk, cycle, or run, you logged it down. As a family, you accumulate it and log it down. So one family could have done 50 miles in a day if they'd all gone out on the bikes. And this is lockdown. We could, you know, we had to walk, we had to do something. And we did it, we achieved it. We surpassed 9,000 miles in the month of May, and we raised over £2,000 for this community, and we got live pictures of the community bringing stacks of food, and it was the most amazing thing to be involved in.
Brilliant.
Now, I was at the start of that, personally, I was walking every day. I've done 10 miles today in lockdown. Get in, I've done my 10 miles. Tomorrow, I'm going to do 11 miles. And then we're going to keep going and I'll log it down. And then it got to a point, I can't not do 10 miles a day. And then it turned into running. And that was the story. And then the running just started progressing, and the love for being in the trails and the outdoors came into where we are today, where we're running for like this amazing sort of feeling, and you know, it's great.
A story like that ends in trail running. Most people fall into it and in a similar way to yourself, but it's nice to have that feeling, because most runners now that we talked to, our most run clubs that now we have are formed out of a lockdown or our own Facebook community of people doing 5Ks and stuff. It's a fabulous story, and I suppose again it just shows you how important sport is around the world for communication and community and the coming together through sport. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. And you have done a hell of a lot of miles on your own since then as well. And ultras where you've got yourself, for example, in your Strava in 2023, you covered 3,409 kilometers. And you also climbed 84,000 meters, nearly 85,000 meters, which is probably more scary than the rest of it. How have you found that from that journey then to 2023, covering that distance on your own? And what has that journey been like from you?
Yeah, it doesn't seem long ago. It feels like I've been running for a long time now, but actually in the grand scheme, I think I haven't. I'm still new and I'm still... And I get a lot of questions. Oh, can you help me? Give me tips for this on social media. Can you give me advice for this? And that's great. And I've learned so much in a short space of time of people who've been doing a lot longer. But the best way to learn, I guess, is just go out and do it. But I've just got a huge... I've never done a road marathon yet. And I think I want to do that. But for me, the trails and the mountains is where I come alive and I'm excited to be in. Always have been, always will be, and that won't ever change as long as my body and my legs can let me do that. But yeah, I guess for me, I'm not somebody, and you've reeled off some, if you know, for me, I'm proud of those numbers, but I'm not one of these runners who want to go, right, I've done a 50k race, now I'm gonna go and do an 100k race, now I'm gonna go and do a 250k race. For me, that's not what it's about just pushing yourself each time. It's a I'm really happy with the space that I'm in and enjoying what I do, weekly training. Yes, I race, but I don't race too much. And I do talk about racing when I do it, because it's a big learning curve. But I also am competitive against myself. I'm not an elite. I'm not a pro. I'm never going to compete at the top. Of course not. But it's the process of getting there and realizing that as we get older, actually, we can still do more than we think we can. If this is strong and we eat well, sleep well, and you know, we hydrate and all that, and you know, the way of learning, we can keep going for longer than we think we can. So I'm really thrilled to be in the running community and taking up running now, because if it wasn't there and I didn't get that, I don't know what I would be doing right now, because I know football wasn't healthy in the last couple of years for me mentally. I wasn't enjoying it. So yeah, I'm extremely grateful and thankful. And, you know, I've just done a recent race in Croatia, which... When I became 40, I'm 41 now. When I came 40, I wanted to race abroad. That was a goal. Okay. In my 40th year, my goal is to race abroad. I'll just book a race, what falls in the school holidays, so I can go and do it and experience racing abroad. And it didn't happen last year. I ended up getting I got a little bit ill in the summer, and that was actually, I'm happy to talk about, as burnout. So you were talking about earlier about overdoing things. How do you juggle all this thing? I actually developed burnout and I was knackered, messed up in the summer. So I had to overcome that. So that fell on the wayside. But so this year I feel tons better. I've had a lot of rest and digest, and I raced Istria last week, which was amazing. And I've actually got another race in Chamonix, UTMB, at the end of August, which is exciting. So yeah, it's life's about just experiencing things and going living and learning and progressing and doing the best, getting the best version of you for whatever opportunities come your way. And that's what I feel like I want to do over the next chapter.
You're talking about running community. It's funny you started that saying you hadn't done a road race marathon, yet. London Marathon's coming up this weekend. Weekend and next weekend. The lottery's this Saturday for the 20th for people trying to get the 45th Marathon. While you haven't done a London Marathon, you have a phenomenal London Marathon story from last year.
Yes. Phenomenal. Yeah. I've got a good friend of mine, Mark Peart, who is, boy, he's one of the fittest people I know on the planet. He is an insane sort of all round. Do we want to call athlete? He doesn't like using that term, athlete. I know, but he's a super human. And I'm lucky enough to have done a lot of training with Mark. I often chase him around the trails, try to keep up with him. It'd be super strong. But as an all-round sort of sporting man, he's great. And he's a fireman, and he asked me to be one of his crew team to support him running the London Marathon last year under oxygen, so under the mask and a full PPE suit. And he smashed it, and he got the record. He brought the Guinness World Record in doing it. Most people, firefighters, do it in just uniform, but he did it with a full tank on, where he had to breathe with a full breathing apparatus on it. And we were with him. Every 2 miles, where we changed the system, and we make sure that he didn't step forward while he didn't have the mask on and the tank on. So I remember running around with a spare tank and vest on to carry and take it to the next stop, running across tubes. Like, it was amazing.
How heavy is that tank?
Oh God, how much did he go away? I think the full kit that he had on was 20 kg. So I'm sure it was. I should have done my homework on looking back at the numbers, but yeah.
Probably about 40, and he's cursing you right now.
He'll be like, what are you doing to me, Rich? But yeah.
To put in context of how phenomenal this achievement is, they're going for the Guinness World Record, and he did his time in 4 hours, 42 minutes.
That's it, yeah.
Previous record was 7 hours, according to Insta post. So from 7 hours to 4 hours, 42, with all this kit and stuff on him. And I didn't even know he couldn't even take a step forward by putting that mask stuff back on, because you had the air cylinders and all in the post.
Yeah.
Like, I was just going to go, that is absolutely phenomenal.
Insane. And most people would be happy with that time without just to show some.
Absolutely.
So yeah, he's insane. He's absolutely. I've just spoke to him this morning, actually. He's just done an ultra yesterday, 52K, 1200 meters, 4 hours. I mean, he's just insane. So I'm lucky that we're good mates and we train together. But I'm very lucky that I've got a lot of amazing mates who live around me who are all amazing runners, you know, in their own right, cyclists, whatever. And we go out and just do it like the Tuesday Club guys. You know, Daz, who runs that, he's 52 and he's got a sub 3 hour marathon time, you know. I've known him all my life, and I'm very lucky to have some great runners around me. Rich Lazenby is a really big runner as well. He did Dragon's Back last year, and, you know, he lives around the corner, and we got training again. So again, I'm lucky with the community I've got around here, friends and great people around. So yeah.
It sounds like a class community. It also seems like your burnout came at the summertime. Was that the reason you did a cold retreat last July? I'm assuming that's when you felt like you had your burnout. I want to talk to you about the cold war therapy and how that helped you. And also you talked about how nasal breathing helped you. When you run and through the trail running, the mountains and all the rest and going uphill and all that, like that, I find that hard to begin with. You do that nasal breathing?
No, I can't. I don't think you can do it all nasal breathing. I think if you can be encouraged to do it all nasal breathing, great. I read the Oxygen Advantage book in lockdown by Patrick McEwen, who I don't know if you've come across that. If you haven't, I recommend having a read or listening to some of the podcasts that he's involved in. So Oxygen Advantage. And basically it talks about how the nose, we're designed to breathe through the nose and not the mouth. And the mouth is designed to obviously intake, obviously fuel, hydration, and talk. And as a mouth breather and a speaker for a living, as a teacher, teachers are knackered at the end of the day. Why? Because they're talking for a living. So people that talk for a living are knackered at the end of the day, and they don't know why. They think it's just the job, the stress of it. And I think it's to do with constantly talking like this all day, managing, get in line, da 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 da. So when we chest breathers, that is not diaphragmatic breathing. And if we use the diaphragm to breathe, we control the breathing mechanisms, and the lungs work more efficiently and effectively if we use the diaphragm to breathe. And the best way to do that is nasal breathing, and it slows everything down. And how the science behind it is that we try and keep back some carbon dioxide. Rather than getting rid of it all and expelling it all, we're trying actually aiming to keep some carbon dioxide in, which balances the pH levels in your blood, which the system, how it works is more oxygen then is actually transported around to the working muscles if more efficiently than it would be if we just mouth breathed. There's the science to back that up. Now, if we're nasal breathing during a hike or a run, a steady run, then the oxygen is actually working more efficiently, and more oxygen is getting to your working muscles more effectively than it would be if you were mouth breathing. Now, if we're running at a race pace or we're doing interval training, it's nigh on impossible, unless you've got a huge amount of training behind you, to nasal breathe. And I hold my hands up. No, I will nasal breathe consciously through the day. Yeah. I'll nasal breathe and do limited talking at school where necessary now, more in the day. I'm breath aware more so than I've ever been. And I tape my mouth up at night to sleep.
How do you find that, the tape the mouth? I've seen that advertised a good few times and people rave about it. Because I mouth breathe so much and so badly, I'm petrified of doing it that I just won't wake up the next morning. But but like, how uncomfortable is that the first few times? And do you need the specific mouth tape to do it? Or is it just one of those where, like, get a good duct tape? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I recommend practicing mouth as a recommendation. If someone was asking me, should I tape my mouth tonight? Not the first. What I would recommend is just practice being breath aware first, as much nasal breathing as possible, because and then when you're out walking or slow jogging, just try it. A good way to do it is something called the Bolt test, the Bolt score, where you inhale through your nose, you hold it, and then when you get that sudden urge to breathe, not that gasp, but that when you start feeling a bit of movement, then exhale through the nose and continue breathing through the nose, in and out, in and out, in and out. And that'll increase your Bolt score. That'll increase your ability to nasal breathe and to hold your breath. When it comes to sleeping, I was nervous the first time I did it, and my heart was beating. I think, and I feel a bit constrained here. I feel like I can't breathe.
Yeah.
Actually, I get no sinus problems. I never get a blocked nose since doing this. My sleep is deeper. I don't wake up with a dry mouth. I wake up with more energy, and I really recommend it. And all I use is 3M micropore tape. You don't need specialist tape. Just get it 3M micropore tape, and just literally goes across. And that's that. So try it. But listen, just be breath aware first before you go into it, and just practice little drills and skills. Yeah.
My better half be dying for me to try it.
during the day as well, yeah.
Yeah. Keep on all the time. Be really proud of where, Sean. Okay.
She'd wrap that tape 3 or 4 times. It is something we see, and I suppose we've always said, like, focusing on your breath, it can control heart rate. And it is, we're always looking for the benefits, and everyone's always looking for benefits. And like we say, it works for some mightn't like it. And that's what it all comes down to as well. With the likes of the mouth breathing, nasal breathing, you find it works for you and others might not like it. And they find that sitting in a sauna for a half hour a day is how they get their deeper sleep and stuff. And it is all about trial and error for what works for you, really, isn't it?
Ah, completely. And we're actually fed. Social media is terrible for this, but it's great. So many other ways as well, in terms of getting us to information and learning about those small marginal gains. And I feel like more than ever, we're being pressed with, you should be doing this to improve your better. And we're feeling, oh my God, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, I'm not taking this, I'm not taking that. shit, am I actually living a healthy life? Maybe I'm not, because I'm not doing this, that, and the other. But actually, sometimes you just got to strip it all back and go, right, what works for me? When do I feel good? What makes me feel good? And if the basics are there, we don't need X, Y, and Z to tell us what we should be doing. Yes, it's helpful at times, and we learn little things that work for us. But what, again, that's a great thing that you said there. What works for one doesn't always necessarily work for another. And I'll never, ever preach and say, you must try this. You've got to try this. You have to do this, because that's just wrong. Because again, it's just never going to be like that. It should never be like that. And that's the crux of I've come through education, through teaching people how to swim, to then in education in schools and physical education. And again, you can't force these things on anybody. You've just got to let it be natural, but advise and guide. Guidance is the best way. Self-discovery is, something that we should all be accountable for.
Yeah. And even on your Instagram, you do have that balance, because while you obviously are the runs and the trail running, like a lot of stuff you talk about is getting sufficient. Like you have four key points on one of your posts. You talk about getting cardio in, your strength training twice a week, but you also talk about fueling correctly and getting sufficient sleep in. Yeah. What is fueling correctly? What does that term mean for you?
I think it's just being aware of what's going out and what's coming in. The expenditure of energy that runners, athletes, whatever you want to call, we're involved in. We've got to remind ourselves to replenish that with good nutrition and good fuel. And I eat a balanced diet. I eat sensibly. I love the most important meal of the day for me is breakfast, and I'll have a good amount in my breakfast. And it's just to make sure that you are. Some days I get it wrong. Some days I get it wrong. Bloody hell, last night I was eating a tub of Haagen Dazs ice cream. Who cares, that's fine. You just got to do things in moderation. I never get on scales. I never count calories. I'm calorie aware, carb aware when I'm running and doing a long run. I've got a 30K run later on this afternoon with my friend. And I'm aware of when I'm eating before I go for that run. And I'm aware of what I need whilst I'm running. I'm also aware of what my body needs during a race. Do I get it wrong sometimes? Yeah. But how do you eliminate those errors? By doing more of it and then working out what works for you. Am I with a nutrition company that works for me? Yes, and I'm grateful and lucky for being with Sterker. But that doesn't work for the next person. They might not like the taste of those gels or the breakdown of the compound of the breakdown of what's in those bars or gels or whatnot. Some people might go, you don't need all that rubbish. You just want to eat old-fashioned, good old, normal, real food, all right? Mm. It doesn't matter. What works for you and what works for your body and what your body can deal with. Some people have strong guts, some people don't. Mm-hmm. Some people learn the hard way and they end up learning about it during the run. We've all been there. But you've got to, it's through, trial and error, self-discovery and putting yourself through, bonking. You love talked about the bonking term so many times, and we've all experienced being hypoglycemic during training or a race where you're going, oh my God, I've gone past the stage where if I take anything in now, I've gone past. I'm done. And it's an awful feeling, but that makes you stronger. Makes you stronger, made me stronger. And my friend, it was, I'll never forget this run with Mark out in the Peak District, Mark P again. We were out on a long run in the Peak District a couple of years ago. I was still naive and new to learning a lot of things, getting things wrong. And I, on the last 6K coming down this hill, I bonked. And I said, mate, I've gone, I'm done. I had to stop. I fell over. I was delirious. And he says, mate, get some more jet. And I've taken it. I've just gone. And I remember a key point in telling me was, and I learned this, that'll make you stronger. You're going to be so much stronger from that because your body's becoming more resilient. Your body's going through a term of trauma, and you're going to be more resilient from that. You're also going to be aware that actually, before you get to that stage of that feeling, you're going to eradicate that before. You're going to eat, you're going to fuel more. So going back to your question, fueling is massive. Yeah. Just I eat sensibly, I eat well. And yeah, it's having a good balanced diet but also understanding what my body needs during and post exercise as well. So yeah, it's not too, doesn't need to be complicated.
Hmm.
As you said, there's a lot to be learned from making those mistakes. Sean has made loads of the learning element, I think, is a bit, it's like watching Homer Simpson getting punched every time he does a race.
This podcast is all about just me talking about my mistakes.
yeah, exactly.
It is something like I've even mentioned on this podcast, that I'll eat chicken and rice before any long distance stuff in the morning. And people are like, how do you eat chicken and rice? I was like, I don't know. It just works.
It just works.
It's just, you will find all of those different things as you try them out. And you'll never see Sean without a Lucozade. He's like a walking advertisement for Lucozade during any 42.2K. But it is brilliant. And I suppose the beauty about, and the people that everyone's like, oh, how do you manage nutrition? And how do you keep calories and this, that, and the other? I suppose the beauty about sport and having that positive physical attitude in your lifestyle, you can stop worrying necessarily about calories because you're always active, because your metabolism is high, because of everything else. And it's the beauty of having a lifestyle based around running or sport or being active. And that's why you can go Häagen-Dazs today. It's okay. I've 30K in 2 days. We'll balance the books in other ways. And that's the beauty about, well, for me, running and training is always a motivation for that ice cream or that chocolate, or you know, when you're able to balance it out, and it's rewarding in that sense.
Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing finer, is there, than finishing a run or a cycle or whatever you do, and then calling it the nicest deli after and getting a nice coffee and a nice cake, croissant, whatever. Yeah, you know, sport is there to be enjoyed. And you know, I'm glad, you know, I know someone who's just turned pro for Adidas, and That must be scary, exciting, but scary, because they're scrutinized in everything that they do. I'm not scrutinized. No one scrutinized me. Who am I? But I look at me and I know what I want and when I want it, but I know to balance it out completely. Yeah, completely.
You seem very competitive. How do you, I've seen a lot of posts and stuff you've done where you're actually on the other side of the camera lens, taking photos of people you're doing UTMBs and all the rest. Is that frustrating because you're not actually, I know you're doing your passion, but like you're not in that race. You see them in that race. Do you get that little bit of jealousy then? And two, is there anything in the trails you've learned like, oh, I wouldn't have learned this, only that I was in the sidelines at this stage, seeing a racer do this or that kind of thing?
So in terms of photography and seeing, watching, yes, I've got a hell of a lot of races. I've got so many races lined up over the next 8 weeks shooting. And that is, for me, I love this sport so much that fuels my passion as well. So being involved in it on the other side, being part of the media team, for example, for races, it's a different type of excitement for me, being involved in racing. Seeing people on the other side, that gets my heart racing. That gets me, I want to be in this race. Yeah, of course. But I love, there's such a drive to see people so close and take and document that through photography. I've always loved it, and I've always taken photos all my life. never with a decent camera until the last few years. But yeah, I love documenting people, and during races, it does make me want to get involved more. But I'm again lucky to be shooting in races, for example, coming up. But what was the last question? Sorry.
Have you learned anything of like seeing? I suppose you're probably just too busy watching people and you know, getting the right photos, stuff like that. But just during that, has it been things you picked up going, oh, I should do this in my race?
Good question. I mean, you because I'm competitive myself, and I analyze the top runners and I go, what are they doing differently to me and how are they so much better than me? Well, they train more, they're younger, they've been doing it a longer time, and they you know, genetically and physiologically better made up than me, that's fine. But what else are they doing? What shoes are they wearing?
Yeah.
What socks are they wearing? When did they get the poles out? Well, you know, you do watch and analyze that. And that comes through, you know, when I take photos as well, I'm like then looking through the photos and looking every little bit. I love kit. I love wearing kit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a sucker for decent kit and trying things out and testing things. But yeah, and it's, have I learned stuff from other runners? I've learned stuff from other runners during training.
More so
not during races. A hell of a lot through training, through running with different people who are better than me. A hell of a lot. And I'm very, Mark Carey, for example, he took me on my first long run. He spoke to me. This is before Mark P and Rich Lazenby. He was the guy I looked up to. He got me into it. He got me involved in a lot of things. And I learned a hell of a lot from him. I always remember calling him the week before my first ever ultra. He says, right, take this, that, and the other. And that was a huge learning curve. And, you only learn by, again, trying, but networking is key. Don't be scared to ask. And, you know, I'll ask. And I'm still learning today.
That's the beauty of a podcast like this, is getting guys like you on, because so many of the couple of thousand who listen each week are getting so many nuggets from so many different athletes, and yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And I'm sure the producer of the media team is delighted that their photographer can keep up with most of the athletes together. Yeah. It definitely helps with the job.
Yeah.
From one side of the lens to the other, let's talk about your latest race, if you're happy enough to it, and how you found it, and yeah, if you can take us through Istria, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so Istria is part of the UTMB series races, which is, you know, you could call the podium of trail running races in the world, with the pinnacle being at Chamonix, which is the real UTMB there. So the UTMB is taking over. The UK's version is UTS Wales, which is coming up in May, and I'm shooting that. I've run it for the last 2 years. But there are three main distances in these UTMB races: the 100 miler, the 100K, and the 50. And invariably, they'll change. The distances are similar, but the profile in terms of meters elevation will change, perhaps in different countries. So Istria, I saw that it was available. I wanted to do a race in Easter. Istria was available. I saw it there. They had a 69K, they had a 100K and a 100 miler. And I thought, I'm going away for the first time abroad. Me and the missus are going away for 5 days. I don't want to do, I could do the 69K, but I'm not going to, because I want to be able to still be actively doing some on holiday and chilling and having a good time as well. So the 42K option was there, which is obviously a marathon. It had just about 1,000 meters elevation, so it wasn't too punchy. And my homework over the last 2 years of Istria have been 15 degree. I'm looking at the weather, 15 degrees cold at some, like this thing last year, it had wind and a bit of snow on top and all sorts. So I packed for a bit of cold weather, and then a week before the weather changed, and it's ended up being a bloody heat wave. So, 6 months of running in the Peak District in Sheffield of cold, wet winter months, and going straight into your first race of the year being 25 degree heat is like not ideal.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it ended up being hotter than the actual weather apps were saying. It was 25 degrees and pure wall-to-wall sun, hardly any shade on route, and no wind. And because where we were running on the particular part of the linear route, we got a two-hour coach out. And the race started midday, by the way, 12 o'clock. This is not
in the middle of the heat, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is not like a 9 o'clock start where you're going a bit cooler and you might be done. We started midday. And the coach journey was like an hour and 20-minute coach. Now a coach journey to Mortavun, a beautiful sort of village in the middle of this northern eastern region of Croatia, which actually connected to the longer races. They came through the same pathway. And we were on the last 42K of the race. And we started up, we're only 350 meters high at the highest point. So we weren't high, but at 12, we got there at 11 o'clock. Okay, now what do? We wait around at the start line for an hour.
Oh,
and we hit, and there's hardly any shade anywhere. So everyone's cut under the shade. I went to this lady. I put some cream on initially, but I didn't have enough on. I saw this lady putting some more on, some 50. I said, do you mind if I borrow some, put some more cream on and cover me up a bit more? And so we're waiting around. Then I went for like a little 2K warm-up run, about half an hour to go, 20 minutes to go, and just run around the streets, just get the legs going, loosened up a little bit. And then he started. And I tell you what, the amount, however many races you do, you can't control the adrenaline, you can't control the nerves, you can't control the excitement. And that's what is, that's the excitement, exciting things about races. So when people say, oh, you shouldn't race too much, or you should practice racing, I think it's a really good tip to actually practice racing. If you've got a race in mind that's your A race for the year, I still think you should do a few other races leading up to it, whatever, and you know, just to practice how you cope mentally and the adrenaline and the anxiety and the stress and the, you know, all those different emotions that you go through that you can't replicate in training. You can't replicate, come on, we're going race pace in training today. You're not nervous before that, are you? You're not excited before that necessarily. You can't control that. So I was nervous. I was excited. I was, you know, unknown abroad, but I knew it was going to be nothing. You know, it wasn't a mountain race. It wasn't on ridgeline, single track sort of scrambling routes. It was in the lakes or Wales or anything like that. It was just single tracks on sections. It was gravel roads. It was a few communities. It was a lovely route. The first, all the climbing, and I think 900 meters of climbing was in the first 20K. So it was a pretty tough start in terms of the profile. My legs started to make a little bit of noise about 12K in of cramping, which is early. So yeah, early for me. And I'm like, don't bloody start now. Legs, stay with me. And I'd had what I thought I needed in terms of electrolytes, loaded before, the night before, etc. Did I drink enough during that race? Probably not. I probably could have drunk a little bit more pre-race as well in terms of water. I didn't expect it to be as hot as it was. And that was a mistake. But Mike, I didn't cramp. I didn't cramp at all during the run. And there was a hell of a lot. There's 20K downhill all the way. And you didn't realize, people think it's hard going up, but actually just pounding down, you know.
On the quads and the hips, yeah.
But so it ended up being, did I have a goal in mind? I don't know if I had a goal in mind. I just wanted to run well and feel good and enjoy it. And I knew I wasn't going to be competitive in that race. You know, there's professional runners in that race. And just go out and enjoy it. It'd been nice to become first Brit home. I think I was second, but there weren't many British runners running in it. But I was happy. With 5-6K to go, we were running through these fields. And I'm like, this is never ending. And my legs were tired. My legs were heavy. It must have been due to lack of hydration, maybe just not race fit. But I thought I did sufficient training leading into it. Perhaps there were a few specific sessions that I missed off that I should have done. I'm not with a coach. You could argue whether we need a coach at our level or not. Yes, for accountability. Yes, for a bit of, it saves you time to think about it. Or, you know, can you just go and do it yourself? That's another debate, another topic area we can talk about. But yeah, I was happy with 5K to go. Can I get under 4 hours? Can I get under 4 hours? I missed out by a minute. But no, happy with the result. Happy with what I'm feeling, yeah.
22nd out of 600 is phenomenal. And whether you had a coach or not, your coaches are bringing the sun to Sheffield. So, you know, you're not going to be able to train for that. Yeah, well, I bet your better half was delighted with the weather that week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I says, listen, we're going to Istria. I don't know if the weather's going to be too pretty. Pack a few jackets, coats, etc. Yeah, we were delighted with the weather. And it was nice after.
It looks like a beautiful part of the world, Croatia, from the photos I've seen from people online that have done it.
Yeah, beautiful part of the world. Istria is not sort of the place Brits go. British people would go necessarily on holiday. It's very close to Italy. It's on the border of Italy and Slovenia. So it's, you know, it's quite a nice region to visit. Yeah.
So taking that now, what's next for Rich? You've mentioned August. Is this now building into a summer of an intense training block for a real goal now in August? Obviously, you picked a 42. It was a race test. Is this your A race coming up in August?
Yeah, OCC is like the London Marathon for roadrunners. So it's the pinnacle of selected races. It's the most hyped up. It's the biggest, you know, covered races. You can watch it live. It's, you know, you can't just put in and pay for that race and get a spot. You know, it's like you have to be pulled out of the draw. And to be pulled out of the draw, you've got to have what's called running stones. And you want to get running stones if you race other UTMB races. Istria was one, for example. So I've now got two stones again. Last year, I had four stones. They've all been taken because I got successfully picked out of the hat. So, yeah, that's my 20 weeks, is it? I think something like that, end of August. So, yeah, I will be pushing for that. The Elevate, it's an extra 10K on the race that I've just done, but it's an extra 2,500 meters climbing. So that's massive. It's 3,500 meters of elevation. You could call that Snowdon, going up, you know, three times if you want. Ben Nevis three times up and down. So it's a mountain race. But it's hard packed trails. It'll be super busy with so many runners because they pack it. I've been there for the last 2 years as a photographer and as a fan, and it's just buzzing. It's electric. So yeah, being able to run this year I'm lucky. I'm grateful. So that's what I'll be training for, and I'll get a race booked in before that as well. A bit of a training race, if you want to call it. I don't know the distance yet, but a local one just to test things and test the water. So that's that, and hell of a lot of races to shoot as well. I've also got another goal to try and achieve this year, which is not a race, but it's the Peak Divide, which is you get a train from Sheffield train station to Manchester train station and run all the way back through the Peak District. It's 84K. I'm just going to do it as a bit of a social run. So, yeah. That'd be nice
today. I don't know. There's a lot of people here now. They'll meet you for the social drinks afterwards, I'd say.
Yeah. Hey, it's daylight hours in summer. There'll be 12. It'll be plenty. It'll be chilled. And I've said to people, come and join me on route 20K or whatever. And yeah, that'll be a good fun day. But exciting year. Hell of a lot of races to shoot as well. So I've got to make sure that my training balance of work-life balance is balanced.
Well, Rich, best luck trying to do that. We'll have all your Instagram details in the show notes at rich.trails, is it, on Instagram?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
we'll have that in the show notes for people to follow. And even, like I said at the start of this podcast, for the photos and stuff you take alone in the mountains there, it's absolutely phenomenal. Rich, it's been great having you on this week's podcast. I know you said you're going for a 30K run, the lads. Great way to spend a Sunday afternoon. Absolutely brilliant having the podcast. Best luck over the summer with that race in August. And that's it for myself, Rich, and Eric. Take care.
Thanks so much.